You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
Thanks to Concordia University, Wisconsin for your support of The Coffee Hour. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
We have a very special musical event happening in St. Louis. For those of you who are local, actually, two times you can experience this musical event, the St. John Passion Box, St. John Passion with the American Contrite. And joining us today to talk about the Contrite and St. John Passion is Dr. Maurice Boyer, music director of the American Contrite. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about, I know you can talk about Bach for hours, but in the next few minutes, let's zero in on Bach's St. John Passion. What is the St. John Passion? Where does this fit into Bach's massive body of work?
So first of all, the piece falls within the category of what is called an oratorio passion. And so that distinguishes it from a passion oratorio.
Wait, what's
believe it or not. And an oratorio in this case almost functions like an adjective. So passion is the more important part, just like it's the opposite for the other. And so from a very practical standpoint, that means that in the oratorio passion, the full text of the gospel, whether it's Matthew or in this case, John, so the passion narrative in John 18 and 19 is heard verbatim the whole way through as recited, essentially on pitch, of course, by the character of the evangelist. And then various other soloists will take on the other roles. So the role of Jesus, the role of Peter, Pilate, the servant, and so forth. And so, as I said, so the gospel text is right there at the core, sort of the bedrock of the whole piece. And then around that are chorales, familiar chorales, and maybe some whose texts would not be familiar, but mainly these would have been familiar to the congregation. And so these are in responses to what's going on in the piece. And then there are also poetic texts that are the basis for arias. And here again, they're soloists, so individuals commenting upon the narrative. So you have the communal response in the chorale, and then the individual response. That's not to say that sometimes the chorales don't take the first person singular, but still it's the first person singular for the community. Then there also are bookends. So there's an opening chorus, closing chorus that kind of stand in some ways outside the passion, sort of like an overarching look at things. Although in this case, as opposed to the St. Matthew Passion, there is a closing chorus, but that closing chorus is almost still within the narrative to some degree. It's the final chorale that really answers the opening chorus. So that's sort of overarching, an overall look at the piece. But the really real important thing is to know that beyond that is that the piece was intended for worship. This is not a concert piece. Not that it's not good that it is being done that way. I mean, it's actually fabulous that the piece is done, period. But it's intended for Vespers on Good Friday. And that's when it would have been heard by the congregants in Leipzig, which is when or where Bach wrote this. The first performance took place 1724 on Good Friday. In that year, that was April 7th. And after that, Bach revised it the following year, different version, this time chorale-based, so the opening chorus is no longer there, closing chorus, all of that is different, including arias in the middle. Then he brings it back two more times after that, and touches it up a little bit, and every time it somewhat changes. So unlike the St. Matthew Passion, he doesn't get to a form of it that's quote-unquote final. And the version that's commonly performed today actually is a modern reconstruction. So it's kind of based on the last version and on the first version. And I could talk more about the differences, which are really quite fascinating. The text that is used is mostly the first version, much more poetic text than the second version. So, yeah, that's some background. But again, I must stress that this would have been intended or was intended and would have been heard on Good Friday for the worship service, the Vespers service.
All right, music appreciation 101 questions here.
Yes.
For the layperson who maybe isn't a musician, first, and you've touched on this a little bit, but maybe expound on this a little more. Mm-hmm. What distinguishes an oratorio from other works of music, such as a cantata or something like that? How is an oratorio different?
Well, oratorio passion, first of all, I mean, the simplest way in which it's different is the scope. I mean, a cantata, yeah, I mean, even the two-part cantatas, the longer cantatas, are probably only about 40 minutes at the most. That's kind of the outer limits of a cantata. This, on the other hand, is, you know, we're talking not quite 2 hours, unlike St. Matthew Passion, which is a good deal longer. It's, you know, at the very least, an hour and 50 minutes, probably. So the scope to begin with. But then also that it's the biblical story that is being told. With a Passion oratorio, it's sort of a retelling of the gospel or some biblical story, right? I mean, as in, you know, Messiah or various other things. I mean, with Messiah, it's verbatim the text. But other pieces from the period would have been a poetic response or poetic retelling of the events. So biblical narrative would probably be the way to say that they're maybe most different. Bach has an Easter oratorio. He also has an Ascension oratorio. And they're also in some cases, it's the biblical text verbatim. In other cases, it's a poetic recasting. So that would be, I guess, one of the ways I would say.
So I'm assuming if we were playing the etymology game, oratorio, and you compared it to telling the story. So I'm guessing that's where the word comes from.
Oratorio, speaking, right? Yeah. Sure, of course, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Telling the story.
Nice job, 10 points.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Okay, next question for Music Appreciation 101. Why is this such an important piece in music history?
That's a pretty big question. It's interesting to consider that all these larger works of Bach's kind of went into, I wouldn't say dormancy, but, you know, he worked really just within the context of Leipzig and actually just in a small radius, within a small radius of Germany, unlike Handel, who moved all over the place. So these works might not have become known apart from Mendelssohn's revival of St. Matthew Passion. And I think what from the get-go people heard in this music was just tremendous depth, tremendous. I guess the depth would be something that is quite astonishing in these works. And obviously people have responded to it even in the concert hall. Even people who are not Christian have found it very powerful just because of the depth of humanity that Bach brings to it as well. I mean, you see tremendous understanding from a theological standpoint. You can tell there's a deep faith behind it. There's also just tremendous human understanding that he brings to anything he writes. So, I mean, it's astonishing what he does. I think the fact that it's appealed to so many people over the years in such a broad swath of humanity, really, continually responds to the work, I guess, is one of the things that does make it very significant.
Now, if I did my math right, this piece is 300 years old. Yeah. This year?
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Right on the dot. And that's one of the things, I suppose, that drove me to want to do it now, this year, although I wanted to do it for a very long time. So,
what kind of forces does it require to do this? Because this isn't a small work to produce.
No, for sure not. Unlike the St. Matthew Passion, which has double choir, double chorus and double orchestra. In this case, it is just a single orchestra and not a large orchestra when it comes down to it. It's strings, and so violin down to double bass, two flutes, two oboes. Some people will double the bass line with a bassoon. Most often that is the case. And for us, we're not doing that. In terms of the string count, typically we're doing three first violins, three seconds, two violas, two cellos, double bass. In Bach's time, it seems as though that was probably roughly the number of players that he had. Hard to know exactly. But for the first version of the St. John, there were other instruments that were involved that he did not use later on. And those would be the viola d'amore. And so that's a very different instrument. It is not It is not a viola. Shouldn't be confused with it. It has more strings, including sympathetic strings underneath the layer of strings that is, you know, across which the bow flows. But it's an extremely difficult instrument to play. I don't need to say any more about that. But then there's also a lute that is used. The only thing is that these two instruments are only used in just two movements. And so I wonder if maybe that is what drove Bach in his later version to offer or to use different instruments. Violins muted rather than viola d'amore, and harpsichord or organ in his later version, which is what we will use. There is one other instrument that is used, and that is the viola da gamba, literally viola, you know, of legs. Basically, all it means is that you hold it between your legs so it doesn't touch the floor. It's a very delicate instrument, kind of the cello range, but a more delicate sound. I guess that's probably the best way to put it. But the piece does not have trumpets, it does not have timpani, nor does it have any other brass instruments of any kind. So it is a narrow in scope in some ways, but fittingly. I mean, I don't think we'd want to have trumpets for this piece, for instance. So those are the forces. And then choir and a cast of soloists. An evangelist who sings as a tenor, who tells a story, as I said earlier. Bass who sings the role of Jesus. A bass that sings Pilate. A bass that sings Peter. And then there are soprano, alto, tenor solos as well. Arias that, as I said, comment on the story. In our case, we have two sopranos for the arias, because there are two arias, two basses, one tenor we're using for this, for the arias, rather than one for each aria. I think that kind of covers the performing forces. So not small, but not as big, for instance, even as Magnificat,
We have more to learn about the St. John Passion with Dr. Maurice Boyer, music director of the American Contrary. Right after we take a quick break, you're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others. To live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world. To live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
We're talking with Dr. Maurice Boyer, music director of the American Contrary, about the upcoming performances of the St. John Passion, Bach's St. John Passion. And before we went to break, you were talking about the different musicians that will be performing this. Let's dig into some of the key highlights of this work. And I know that we could talk about this for hours. So some of the things that you think are very important for people to recognize and understand that are happening as they listen to this performance.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are certainly moments along the way, whether they're contained in the arias or in the chorales, that are very poignant to begin with, but also that comment powerfully on the narrative. The chorales, I'll just say something about how the structure of the piece works, because I think that's helpful in understanding this. But the Bach works there, places the chorales and the arias very strategically along the way of telling this story, the narrative here. And there's one such chorale at the halfway point in the second part of the piece. There are two parts in between each part. This is an aside, would have been a homily. Well, a long sermon, actually, but in between two parts, one and two. And at about the halfway point is this chorale, and I'll just translate it. So through your imprisonment has come our deliverance, essentially. And our place of freedom, our haven, is from your prison cell. So there's at the center of everything in the piece, and in a number of ways, are these inversions and these paradoxes, you know, that he must be bound, that I am unbound. He must be wounded, that I be healed. And you hear that sort of thing the whole way through, very much as you well know, part of the gospel according to St. John. It's just right there. But that chorale right there is really the heart of the whole piece. And it's quite amazing that he places it where he places it. I won't say anything more than that about it, other than that it's placed in, for those who like to think about these things, in a large-scale chiastic structure. So there's a cruciform-shaped structure. What I mean by that is that movements on either side at equal distance, so it's like you move from the middle and you go outward in either direction, they respond to one another, whether actually almost exactly musically or very closely. So it's like he's built into the structure itself the fact that this is the heart of the whole piece, like it's cross-shaped. And cross-shaped, of course, standing for Christ, standing for the cross. Powerful, powerful, powerful moment, and very stirring. There are various other ways in which that Bach sets text that is always surprising. It's like he burrows so deeply inside the text that he'll almost flip it on its head from an expressive standpoint. I could say more about that, but There are a couple. There's an aria that I want to mention that occurs at the end of the Passion. This is right after Jesus has given up his last breath, and right before that, he says, as you well know, "It is finished." Depending on the translation that you use, or "is accomplished," maybe clearer to understand. Obviously, this is not the end point. So, and Bach right after that has this astonishing aria. In German, "Es ist vollbracht," meaning, of course, it is accomplished. It's this very plangent kind of aria. It's an ABA section structure, meaning that, you know, you have one segment in one character, the middle section a different character, and the end kind of returns this to the cast of the opening section. Well, in this case, as I said, it's rather plangent and very lonely feeling almost in some ways. Really capturing, of course, you know, that he did this himself, right? No one else did this for him or with him. And it's played by this viola da gamba. There's this obbligato line by the viola da gamba, as I mentioned earlier. It's a very vulnerable sounding instrument. So there's that. There's this solitude. There's this, at the, also this vulnerability that is cast right there in the choice of instrument. And in the middle section, you get suddenly this burst of elation and power in the middle. And the text is, "The hero out of Judah triumphs with might." And it definitely feels that way. I mean, if one has not heard the piece, and if one does not jump out of one's seat at that point, I mean, I'll be confounded. But it'd be hard for me to comprehend anyway, I should say. It is a moment that just so powerfully depicts what happens at that moment of that in this deepest point of abasement is almost contained the exaltation, right? So humiliation, exaltation, boom, right there in that aria. So that's just one example of Bach depicting in sound this, what occurred on Good Friday.
What do you recall about the first time you heard Bach's St. John Passion?
Oh boy! Well, the biggest thing is just how overwhelmed I was. Just, you know, not to sound maudlin or anything, but just being deeply moved many, many times to tears, of course, and at times, you know, tears of just being confounded by the immensity, I guess, of what occurs in the way Bach depicts this, really. And again, the tremendous humanity that's behind it, but the theological understanding. And, you know, having sung the piece many, many times, I think probably a dozen times, I will say that once you reach the final chorale, it is very hard to sing, given the tremendous joy that occurs at the end. So the piece does not end sort of at the entombment. It opens up to the significance of this death for this death, because in that death is rising for us. And that the end just fans open toward the heavens. And it is, as I said, it's difficult to sing that and not, without being rather choked up by it. So powerful emotions would be, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I can attest to that. In our last rehearsal, I get to sing this with the American, I'm part of the American Contrai. So spoiler alert, I do get to sing this piece. And yes, I can attest to that. We did the last chorale in rehearsal, in our last rehearsal. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to get through this without crying. This is going to be a problem in the performance. So yes, it's so good. We have just a couple of minutes left. What are some hooks, some toe holds for people hearing this for the first time, some things that might sound familiar to some people, maybe some of the hymn tunes that would be familiar for people?
Yeah, I would definitely say listen attentively to the chorales. And I think what probably occurred in Bach's time is that people in their minds, could even just sing along in their heads. I mean, it was not the case that they did, in fact, sing along. Although, who knows, maybe they hummed along. Please don't do the performance. Hum along very loudly in your own head. But the text will be printed, so I would say people should read the text attentively. The chorales would be moments that people would recognize. Certainly the last chorale and the chorales. Yeah, chorales.
Yes, there's a lot of really good things that'll happen. And we also have, for people that want to maybe read something beforehand, we have a listener guide that my husband Luther, he wrote a listener guide for the Lutheran Witness. I believe it was last year. So we can include that in the show notes today too, if people want something to read along. Where are these performances happening? How can people find more details for how they can attend?
Sure. Okay. So these events will take place on Palm Sunday at 3 p.m. at the seminary, at Concordia Seminary in the chapel. And on the Tuesday of Holy Week at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in De Pere on Manchester. And that's at 7:30. These are actually not concerts. These are our sort of Vesper service, although not full Vesper services. There will be the opening prayers from the LSB Vesper service, and then the closing prayers, and in between parts 1 and 2, a homily culled from the writings of Johann Gerhardt. So these are services.
Wonderful. And where can people find more information on how to attend?
Yeah, so on the website of the American Contrai, americancontrai.org, and on Facebook, if you're on Facebook, just type that in. Pretty sure that the seminary website also has information about this. So there are a number of places where you can come up or can find the needed information.
Wonderful. Dr. Maurice Boyer, Music Director of the American Contrai, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.